Laura, up on the screens, what would you say? Do you recognize any of these people? Raise your hand if you recognize any of these people. These folks are celebrities. They are superstars in the realm of redo makeover TV. You'll see them on Home and Garden Television, the DIY Network. If my wife had to pick a favorite of all these, it would probably be Chip and Joanna Gaines right there in the middle. She just absolutely loves them, watches the show. Their show is called Fixer Upper. They have a restaurant down near Baylor University and a place where people can go and take vacations. And it's bigger than a lot of us realize. But you think about these shows, and I was letting on a little secret. A few weeks ago, somebody told me, they said, you know these shows are staged. And I said, what? They said, yeah, a lot of these shows are staged. The two on the left, I forget what, Love It or List It, I couldn't tell you their names. But you know, you watch the show and they go through the show and the couple can't decide whether they want to sell the house and move into a new house and just have it redone or not. And they go through these conversations where they're wondering, and then right there at the end, while they're all waiting, they make the decision to sell the house or to rehab it, right? That's how that show goes. Well, I was just like blown away by the fact that that's not all real. They've already, in a lot of these shows, they've already made the decision. They've already sold the house and maybe even moved into the new house. And some of this was done later, but they just kind of reacted. And so it's kind of a reality show. But in these shows, one thing about it, it's all about the house. It's about rehabbing and fixing it or not to fix it or how to fix it. A crisis comes and they find asbestos or termites, and what are we going to do now? Are we going to make budget? It's all about the house, and it's made for TV. But you and I, we are about building something more than a house. We are about building homes. And it's not a semi-reality TV show. It's real life. The man in Proverbs says, by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. And whether the wise man here is focusing upon those things in the home that are pieces of furniture or expensive items, I think you and I know, bottom line, is that the most important treasures in a house are not the things. The most important treasures in the house are the people. And ultimately, we need to remember that we are not building houses, we are building homes. And we know in our homes we face challenges. Just this past week in one of our schools, some of our children in that school knew a young lady, a girl, who committed suicide. And we're dealing with a lot of hard, tough, difficult things in our families. And they range from maybe some small things to some very, very important things. And that's why with our kids and our families, this Northeast family, our families being so important, I took the opportunity several weeks ago to sit down with a couple of people here at Northeast who work with families and children, and I interviewed them. And I want to show you in a minute in the video some of the things that they shared with us about their perspective on parenting and working with families and that sort of thing. One of them is Tom Cox. Where is Tom Cox this morning? There you are, right there in the back. Where's your dad? Where's the coffee man? All right, he's there to the side. Tom is the son of the coffee man, and that's how we know Tom. He's known because of the coffee man, but Tom is somebody who's been extensively involved in working with families for years. Got his degree in psychology from Harding, and then his master's in counseling psychology at Central Arkansas, has been providing health care and been in programs for 35 years, was a youth and family minister, ran a school for at-risk kids, a drug and alcohol treatment program, and in 2014 opened Families Matter, a nonprofit that provides family solutions, especially working through children and family services as an alternative to juvenile detention in the court. So Tom has worked pretty extensively with the courts through the years, and much of that work has been with single parents. And he just recently opened the Tri-D Center that focuses on solutions in families. The other one we interviewed is Katie Dixon. She's right over here. Her husband, Brian, is sitting right next to her. He is one of our deacons. And Katie completed her undergraduate and master's work at Cincinnati Christian University, worked at Focus on Youth for 2 years and specialized in play therapy with children and traumatized kids. And now she's in private practice, working with families struggling with behavioral issues, depression, anxiety, and other mental health concerns. And by the way, she's also provided counseling to Northeast couples and individuals, and continues to do so. And I just wanted, with the seriousness of family issues and their expertise in the field, I wanted you to be exposed to them and some of their thoughts and what they do. I think they're a great resource here at Northeast. And I also want to thank Nick Hutchins. He is not here this morning. He is in Detroit kind of getting things ready for a youth event, a service event that's going to occur down there in a couple of months. But we probably put 20 hours into this interview, and you're getting just a little over 10 minutes of it. But I couldn't have done it without Nick and his help in this process. So without further ado, let's listen to parts of this interview with Tom and Katie.
Some of the challenges that I see in families that I work with are how we implement everything that we need to do with our family in a 24-hour period. So how do we fit parental connection, kids' activities, sitting down and eating dinner together, all of those important things in that time? We are so busy and overscheduled that I find a lot of times we want to go towards the easy thing. So we get home, we're done working, mm-hmm. we get done with dinner, and we want to give kids the technology because we're tired. So that time and connection piece is something that I really see as a deficit in families that I work with. And I'm guilty of it too at times. You know, sometimes it's just easier to give them the television or give them the iPad. But that technology piece, I think, is really causing a lot of issues, because it's not allowing our parents to connect with our kids, but it's right. also not teaching our kids how to have conversation with other people, how to problem solve with other people. And so it really is, you know, a barrier for all of the skills that we really need to be successful adults in life.
And then support. I deal with a lot of families where there's only one parent, and it's unfortunate, but oftentimes when you only have one parent, regardless of what the gender is, but I see an awful lot of single mothers, and they've got sons that have no male figures in their lives. And a very common question that I'll ask is, well, do you guys belong to a church? Do you belong to any community activities? And oftentimes I get no. And I know that...
So they're handling it all by themselves.
All by themselves. And there's resources out there. And it's making sure that they know that those resources are out there. One of the questions I ask young people when I talk to them is, who do you talk to when you've got a problem? And it is not uncommon. They say, I don't have anybody. And that's unfortunate, because they're going to talk to somebody, or they'll say, well, I've got a friend. Well, give me somebody that's an adult. Well, I don't really have anybody. Maybe it's an older brother or sister, but they may be just 1 or 2 years older, in which case they don't have any more breadth of experience than they do. So it's making sure that they've got support, that they've got a connection to other people.
maybe elaborate a little bit more on some practical, proactive steps to accomplish some of the things in nurturing healthy families. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so some of the things that I've recommended to families and parents is not to overschedule. So have some time planned out where there is nothing planned. There's nothing to do. And that doesn't mean we go home and watch television together. We go home and we just have nothing. So does that mean we go outside? Does that mean we sit in the living room and see what kind of a conversation pops up? And I think you'd be surprised what your kids will say, what kind of things will happen when you just leave that kind of open, empty time. A positive verbal affirmation is not always a piece. So what I try to help parents get to is that middle ground. Yes, we want structure. Yes, we want boundaries. You're supposed to be modeling that for your children. But we also want to provide them connection and a healthy engagement to be able to come to us and say, this is what I'm going through right now. This is what I'm feeling. And not be afraid to tell you that.
Right.
So that you can help guide them through that. Not punish them through that, but guide them through that. Those are the two kinds of parents that I see. And so, you know, trying to find that middle is really important. And also, a lot of times parents are afraid to bring their children to counseling or come to counseling themselves. And, you know, I just look at it as we're all on a team trying to help everybody get to a better place. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, anything to be ashamed about that at all.
It's about plugging into the community. It's about community resources, that the community provides resources, the schools provide resources. Again, and we and I've had conversations about this, I think the church can provide a lot of that. Mentoring is a very big deal, and there's not enough of it going on. And I look at a body of people here that if I was a single parent raising a child alone, that I would want them, and I've done that. I mean, right. I've been a single parent. But because of my background and my family life, I've always had that support, and I've benefited from that. I moved up here from Arkansas with two kids in tow, four and five, or three and four at the time. And if it had not been for my parents, it would have been a tough road to hoe.
Yeah, so healthy self-esteem, having a healthy identity is really, really important. And it's something that kids are struggling a lot with today. And I know this may sound like a weird answer, but I think one of the things that parents can do is let their child fail. So if we, as a parent, fix everything for our child and do everything for our child and make sure that they're constantly comfortable, then they don't really understand the hard work that takes in to feeling true success. So that self-esteem and that success is based off of the parent constantly running around trying to get everything done for this child.
So I've taught my kids not to take themselves too serious, that it's okay to laugh at yourself. It's okay to foster a sense of humor. And being around a lot of athletes, sports with Elijah, I've seen a lot of that self-absorption and the lack of humility. And it's ugly. And Elijah's always learned that's not the way he wants to be.
Another thing is when you see your child doing something really well, you want to praise them. You want to praise them verbally. But when you praise them, you want to add in the character trait in your praise that you see, and they'll start to hear it and believe it. So for example, if your child really wanted to hit their sister and they chose not to, you could say something like,
Noah never really wanted to hit his sister, right?
Might be the other way around, actually. but you could say something like, I see that that was hard for you not to hit your sister. I'm really proud of you. That shows me that you have a lot of self-control. So as they hear that word, they start to believe, I am somebody that has self-control. Then I start to act like I do have self-control because they believe it. Mm-hmm. So adding that into what they hear every day is really helpful, especially young kids, but even as teens as well. Yeah, so some of the things that can happen, and you know, a lot of these things are why my clients are coming to me, is a lot of times kids will develop an anxiety problem. So they have anxious thoughts that can lead them to want to avoid things like school, want to avoid coming to places that, you know, they normally wouldn't have had any fear of going to. Anxiety can also manifest in behavior problems. So all of a sudden your child might become really irritable, might start doing things behaviorally at home that, you know, they have not normally done. Trouble going to bed at night, trouble sleeping, getting up in the middle of the night, taking a long time to go to sleep. All of those things are things that you can see in younger kids. Mm-hmm. In teens, you might see some withdrawal. you're always going to see teens want to kind of hang out with their peers. That's developmentally appropriate. But if you start to see a lot of that where they don't want to be home at all ever, you know, that isn't as normal. So you can see that as well. And if the anxiety increases so much, then you get to a point where that depression can seep in. So a lot of times those things go together, anxiety and depression. You hear mm-hmm. about those in pairs.
Right.
Because the anxiety is, you know, the bar is raised so high, we've got this feeling of anxiety all the time. We feel like we never reach where we want to be or where we feel like we need to be. We never feel comfortable. And so then the depression kicks in and we've got the lack of motivation. We've got the withdrawal. And that's not just from school and peers, but it's from our family, it's from church, it's from a lot of things. And so, you know, that can lead into depression untreated, can lead into things like self-harm, suicidal thoughts, and that kind of thing. And obviously those are scary things that we want to help as soon as possible so that it doesn't lead into something that we regret.
Keys are finding out what the problem is. If I'm dealing with a juvenile who's having trouble at school, my question is, well, do they have the same problems at home? A lot of times I'll have kids that are having problems at home and not having problems at school, which oftentimes can lead to there's some issues with structure in their lives. But I go back to a lot of single parent households. I think I don't think that being a single parent is the problem necessarily. It's that as a single parent, maybe I'm having problems with the father. Maybe I'm having problems with the mother who's not in the home anymore. And there's a lot of conflict. A lot of the referrals that I get are from Children Protective Services for co-parenting, that you've got two parents. And my approach to it is very much my client is the child. It's whatever's going to be in the child's best interest, which gives me a lot of freedom to say what needs to be said. The parents need to get on the same page when it comes to raising their son, their daughter. And I think oftentimes that's where the problem lies, is that you've got people at each other and they put the kid right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And the child's confused. The child doesn't know how to respond to it. So they respond the only way that children know how to respond, and it's based on emotion.
Right.
And that's what I help them deal with, is trying to figure out what the problem is and what it's going to take to overcome that. Mental illness is a family problem. That I may be dealing, same thing with addiction, I may be dealing with somebody that has anxiety or depression, that's going to impact the entire family. I'm going to make sure that that person who's dealing with the anxiety or not dealing with the anxiety or depression, there's a number of different ways we can go. I believe in therapy. I believe that therapy is a very effective resource, but I also think that medication can play a role in it.
Right.
That there's good psychotropic medications that are out there that when someone says they're depressed, well, there's a world of difference between I'm just kind of having a down day and my brain chemistry has been affected. That's where medication comes into play.
Absolutely.
With anxiety, I tell you, well, just relax. Well, what if you don't know what just relax feels like? Give you a Valium, you see, I can teach you to do that without the medication.
Mm-hmm.
But now you know what that feels like. Maybe we give you some for a period of time, especially in use if there's a panic attack. If you're suffering from panic attacks, a lot of times you can't talk your way out of having a panic attack. Sometimes you need that medical mm-hmm. intervention. But again, my focus is always on I can teach you how to do that without the medication. It may just take time, but it also takes a willingness on your part to learn how to do that.
Yeah, so faith is something, you know, that's driven me to this kind of a job. I That's the biggest part for me. It's very important. And I think it's so helpful in those clients and those families that do come to me for a faith-based perspective. There's more of a team mentality. So we know in the end that we're on the winning side. And so the struggles and everything that we're going through and that they're going through are, it doesn't seem small, but it seems doable because we are all fighting against the same thing and under the same God.
Right.
And so, you know, it's really helpful too for kids because when they know that there's this really big, awesome, powerful God that's on our side, then it helps them also feel like, okay, this is something that I can do because I have a team around me.
Absolutely.
So it is so important. It is hard when clients don't come to me for a faith-based perspective, but you can definitely see the difference when they do want that.
I think a lot of it is that it's the way I live my life. I hope to be living my life based upon Christian principle. I think that faith adds that X factor for a lot of people. I'll give you an example. Oftentimes when I'm dealing with depression, one of the ways that I know that I'm dealing with depression is negative self-references to past, present, future, sense of helplessness, sense of hopelessness. You know, my life stinks. My life's always stunk. There's no reason to think my life won't stink forever because there's no help out there for me and there's no hope that there ever will be help. I'm an advocate that Christ is that hope. That if you're struggling with depression, Christ provides that X factor that I can plug into, that he's always going to be there for me, even the good and the bad. We can be the whole walking on the sand, but that Christ is always there when you want him.
Good point.
And it's how to plug into that.
So that just gives us a little bit of a picture of just the myriad of different issues related to what it means to be family, and especially what it means to be a family that is a Christian family, and that at larger extended idea of us being a Christian family together as a church. And a couple of points I want to make as we just talk about a little application on this. The first one is this. All relationships, every family in some way or another is a fixer-upper. And what I mean by that is there is no perfect family here. And I think sometimes when we're struggling individually or we're struggling as families, we have this idea when we think out there and we see all these people and it seems like they just have everything together. They have the perfect family. And I'll tell you right now, even if you are a part of a good, strong, healthy family, you still have struggles and issues. And if it's nothing major in your own family, there are other people in your extended family that you can point to in terms of sometimes there are very serious struggles and issues. And even if I'm in a situation where I'm dealing with a small matter and I don't think it's a big deal, it's still important to work on things. I mean, you may have a very good family, but that doesn't mean you still can't work on you yourself or work in the family. Most of you know, if you know me at all, you know my story. You know that in terms of my background, divorce, depression, alcoholism, drug abuse, suicide, mental illness, just go down the list. And I know some of your families have dealt with some of the very same things. And the truth is, wherever we are on that spectrum, whether we've dealt with some very serious things or whether we're not dealing with things quite as stringent right now, we still hold up that standard of God's ideal and his standard. And we aim for the best. And I know it hasn't always turned out for every one of you out here in that way. There are some of you who have dealt with divorce and other issues. It certainly wasn't perfect for me, In a lot of ways, my background is defined by dysfunction, but things can be different. Things can be different. And so I determined, with God's help, that things could be different for me and my family. And so that's why, and this is the second point I want to make briefly this morning, and that is this: don't be a do-it-yourselfer. Don't be a do-it-yourselfer. We don't do it by ourselves. We do it together. And that's part of Paul's point in Ephesians 5 when he speaks to families and he speaks to the family of the church. And he says, for example, in verse 21, submit to one another. Ephesians 5, 21, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. You see, it's Jesus and our faith in Him and our dependence upon Him that motivates us and moves us. That's the standard when it comes to how we live as husbands and wives. So wives are encouraged to respect their husbands and be willing to follow their servant, loving leadership in the home. And husbands are called upon to love their wives as Jesus loves the church and gave Himself up for the church. It's all about where God is in the equation. And so we're not doing it by ourselves. We're doing it in relationship with God. And we're doing it to honor Christ. Fathers, don't exasperate your children, but raise them up in the discipline and the instruction, what? Of the Lord. Children, obey your parents in the what? In the Lord, for this is right. And so getting back to what Tom was saying in terms of this X factor, it really is so important that we understand that. It's about us not being alone. It's about us being with Jesus. It's about us making Him Lord. And it's about us as a family recognizing ways we can do that together. And so that leads me to this final point I want to make this morning, and that's this. We need to take action. We don't need to wait. We need to act. In fact, in this very same chapter in the book of Ephesians, right before Paul talks about these family relationships and how we live as family, as husband and wife, as children in the family, Paul says this in verse 15 of Ephesians 5, "Be careful then how you live, not as unwise, but wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil." And so this is truth on all kinds of levels. And it speaks truth to me, and it speaks truth to you. If we are waiting to do something that we need to do, and we need to act, and we're waiting, we're putting it off. We're thinking that maybe things will get better sometime in the future. And they're not going to get better in the future unless somebody takes a step and unless somebody acts. It's kind of like what I did a few years ago with our front door and the water damage in our front door. I looked at it. It didn't look too bad. I didn't feel like worrying about it. And so I let one season go by and then another season go by, and it started flaking a little bit down there. And I just said, my solution was just don't look at it. So come through the garage, look this way when I come in, everything's going to be okay. Well, you know what happens, don't you? You know exactly what happens. You wait too long. What could have been a minor thing to repair early on becomes a major expense. So I had to replace the entire door frame and door and everything. So I helped Bruce Cardin, make a little money on that project. We act, we do something, we take a step. We don't wait, if we can't help it, till the damage gets so bad that it's going to be a total makeover or a total rehab. And you may say, well, in my family right now, we're not dealing with a big mess in my home right now, my family. We're not dealing with a big mess. But we still need to always be trying to look at ways we can improve. It's kind of like the way Jeannie is with projects and wanting to do things differently. And sometimes I want to find a way to block HGTV or the DIY network at home, because when she watched those shows, she's always thinking, oh, you know, that's a good idea. Oh, I'd like to do this. Maybe I need to do this. And it's kind of like when we first moved into our home, she painted the bedroom, and then 3 or 4 days later, she said, I don't like that color. And so we repainted the bedroom again. Now, I'm not saying she's neurotic about that kind of stuff. But listen, that's not a bad attitude. If the cost isn't so great that you overspend. But see, I'm talking about that attitude with our families, building a home. Please don't say everything's good with us. And listen, we can all improve. We can all break out of ruts. We can all strive to be better. So maybe the paint in the room is good, but maybe it could be better. And sometimes it might just be a little tiny practical step that we do, the kind of things that Katie was talking about. Maybe we make a commitment to make the time. We're going to sit down as a family around this table, and we're going to put our devices away, and we're going to spend time looking at each other and talking with each other at least one night a week at the dinner table. Or we're going to adjust our schedule so we can have family devotional time. Or I make a decision as a parent, you know, I have not been encouraging my children the way I should be encouraging them. Maybe I've been a little bit too discouraging. And so Paul says to fathers, don't exasperate your children. Maybe I need to make the decision. Maybe you need to make the decision. I'm going to speak more words of praise and encouragement, because you know how we are. We hear 10 words of praise and one word of criticism, and what do we focus on? The criticism. That's how most of us are wired, and we need to hear more praise. Listen, it may be something very, very serious, and so I'm encouraging you that maybe you need to think about going to a counselor. We have resources here at Northeast. I'm thankful for people like Tom and Katie and others who can be encouraging and helpful. And I encourage you, if you need to take that step, please take that step. It'll be worth the effort. It doesn't always work out. Listen, things don't always end up the way we conceive of them. You may have wanted to make that marriage work, and you worked hard at it, but it didn't work out. And it takes two people to make things work. You can't always control what the other person does. But sometimes we just need to do something different and make a commitment to do so. I'm going to give you a for instance. We have this seminar next week. And so I'm encouraging every one of you, especially if you have children at home or you're a grandparent and have an interest in this, please come to this seminar. We have Dr. Serdaki coming. He's going to be preaching. He's going to be teaching class. There are sessions in the afternoon. And so go to northeastchurch.com. Go to the sign-up area, and please sign up for this. And by the way, there are some more of these little sheets right outside here. And it has a little code on it, so if you have a smartphone and you're a guest this morning, you can take your smartphone, and isn't technology amazing? And you just put that smartphone right over that, and that leads you to where you can sign up for this. If you're a member here, I encourage you to take some of these with you and pass them out to your friends and invite other people to come. But whatever we do, practical steps, we're all at different places in this. You may be facing a crisis right now in your home. You may not be. But God has come into this world in the person of Jesus Christ to repair and fix our broken lives and help us have strong, healthy families. And it might not necessarily happen overnight. But God can help us through Jesus to move us in the right direction. Listen, Jesus is the greatest fixer-upper there is. Amen? And we shouldn't forget that. And he's also the great physician. He was a carpenter before he went out as a rabbi teaching. He also said, I came not to make to heal well people. It's not people who are well who need healing. It's people who are sick. And actually, when it comes right down to it, we all need healing. He's a great physician. And he can do things in your life and in your family's life right now if you let him and lean upon him that you might not have ever imagined. But please do something. We want to have strong homes. We want to have strong families. Those who are struggling with serious issues and going through tough times, we want to love those families, and we want to pray for those families, and we don't want to abandon those families because they're all a part of our family. And so having strong families helps us have a strong church family. And Jesus is the best fixer-upper there ever has been or ever will be. And he invites you. I don't know where you are right now in your need. Maybe all you need to decide is, okay, I'm going to get in touch with a counselor this week, or I'm going to see if I can't talk to Katie or Tom or somebody else. Maybe it's making that decision that you're going to do something different in your home. Maybe you're ready to make a commitment to Jesus and say, I give it all to him. I'm ready to commit my life to Jesus and be baptized into him. And I want to start fresh. And he's the one that builds my life. Whatever your need is, let us know as we sing the song.